Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
And you're listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 1850-453-106 is our low-call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon.
Here is your first question. I have two kids, age 2 and 3. Once they are in bed, they sleep all night. But it takes approximately 3 hours to put them to bed each night. Any advice?
I think sleep is such a trigger point for parents, because I think if everything else is going wrong but you get a night's sleep, then you feel like you're doing okay. Now, the fact that they do sleep all night once they are in bed is great, by the way, that's fantastic. But I'm struck by the getting them to bed phase. So not knowing what the existing routine is, I'm just going to err on the side of there must be a routine, and it has to be calm, consistent, and predictable, because that lets them know when you initiate the first step of the routine that they can predict with certainty what the next step will be and the next step, and then it's leading them into bed. So there's a couple of things. They're 2 and 3 years old, so they're really close in age. So yeah, they're going to trigger and activate each other's little energy systems.
I wonder, are they in the same room?
So they might see this is like our playtime. This is great. And often what happens, not from the parents' point of view, but from the kids' point of view, is this is actually kind of a fun time, that getting to bed. It's a game. They run away. You chase them. You negotiate. They push the boundaries. They're having great fun. So they're quite slow to give that up. So we have to change the routine. And like any change of routine that we've mentioned before, kids don't just embrace that and go, fantastic, finally a routine. You've got to do it in the exact same way for really 10 consecutive nights to put into them that this is the new way of doing it. So a couple of basics: absolutely no screens an hour before bed for those children. So if they're doing some downtime on screens, that's actually working against you, and it's going to actually stimulate them and drive them high. So no screens before bed for an hour. Try and do a good 15 minutes of play that involves fun, laughter, in the moment, and they're getting some of that giggliness and that excitement out of them before you begin your routine. And then you want to have a routine that's something like bath, nice little bit of lavender oil in there. So bath, pajamas, into bed, bedtime story, lights out, get out. And after that, you stop your verbal interaction. It's not that you withhold from them. If they need you to get them back into bed, you do so gently but firmly. No verbal engagement, because if they're pulling you into a chat, that's a secondary gain and they're going to keep doing it. So I would say you've got to take that gentle yet firm, calm, consistent approach and see how that goes for 10 consecutive nights. If it's still a problem, I mean, there are sleep consultants out there. There are sleep consultants who've written books on this, and it might be worth considering that if you have tried this. But I'm a fan of exhaust everything you can do yourself first.
Might it be, if it's possible, an option if mommy and daddy are on hand, or mommy and mammy are on hand, or whatever, to do those things separately? Because might there be...
For each child.
Yes, because the 2 and 3 year old are winding each other up.
Absolutely. And that would be great. I think, you know, some parents probably have a tag team, as in, it's your night, I did it last night, good luck. Yes. You know, and they're going, I'm not doing that every night. But yeah, that could definitely work. If they are also even if they're in the same room, you could do the process separately, getting them into bed. They're very close in age. Like, you're really, there isn't like you can give one of them a head start. They need to be going to bed at the same time.
Yeah. And then even when you get them in there, it's, I'm thirsty.
Oh, it's everything.
I'm scared.
I need a
you
new push scary.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dear Joanna, I came home from a hospital after getting a breast cancer diagnosis. They have caught it early and the prognosis seems positive. Now I am sitting here wondering, what do I say to my children? I'm a single mother of a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. Their dad is not in the picture and lives overseas, but I have an extremely supportive family who are very close to. My 7-year-old girl is a real worrier. I don't want her fretting about me morning, noon and night. I do have to undergo treatment, so I will be gone from time to time, and they will know something is up. Should I tell them the whole truth?
Gosh, I mean, it's, you know, getting a cancer diagnosis is so huge to try and process and deal with yourself. And then, of course, you know, you're a single parent and you're jumping into, but what about my kids? It's so hard to prioritize your own process. What I really love in this, though, is that you have an extremely supportive family. This is going to be vital and something you have to draw on. So, I mean, should you tell them the whole truth? Yes. But you're going to be developmentally appropriate, and a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old are at different stages. So my first thing is tell them, but you're going to plan what you're going to tell them, write it down, speak it out loud a couple of times, have somebody you know hear you say it so that you can get it out without your voice breaking or wobbling, so that you're presenting it in a calm and confident way as best you can, because this is real life here. I also think you should tell them separately because they are at different developmental stages and will hear this news in very different ways. So have a support person present. That could be a designated person from your family. I'm going to suggest you have somebody different for each child, if that's possible. So that when you tell the news, they are hearing it in the presence of their support person. So when, and not if, but when they have questions, that, because children do want to protect their parent. That's really normal. So if, for example, your 7-year-old who you say is sensitive and a worrier, she might not want to ask you difficult questions for fear of upsetting you. But by having somebody there with you, you're identifying this is the person you can ask those difficult questions to if you don't want to come to me. So I think that's really important to do that. I would focus on positive language while being real. So you're going to say, you know, I have a sore, I have a lump inside my breast, and the doctor is going to work really hard to take it out and make me better. You're not going to offer any kind of absolute conclusive statements because the nature of illness is it's unpredictable, particularly sure. This illness. I think it's wonderful they've caught it early, and you can present that the lump is actually only starting to grow. So this is a great time to get it out. And they have very special medicine that I'm going to take. Then you have to introduce what some of the side effects are before the change happens. So if, for example, your hair, if you're having chemotherapy and your hair is going to fall out, that's a very visual symptom. And you will need to help your children be prepared for that. And then you can say, but you know, the great thing about hair is that even when it falls out, it's going to grow back. And you can talk about that. Maybe I'll get a funny wig. And, you know, it's coming up to Halloween. Maybe we'll go pick some funny wigs as well as real wigs and make a game out of it so the children can try on wigs as well. So it's little things like that you can do. I also want to suggest, though, that you connect with your local cancer support group because they are amazing. The Irish Cancer Society will have a list of those if you don't know the one in your area. And they are amazing support, not just to a person who has a cancer diagnosis, but to the family and also the children. I know myself, I've done some voluntary counselling work for my own local cancer support group. So they definitely have child counsellors and therapists available if that's needed. So draw upon that. Also, cancer.ie have a really nice PDF booklet that can be downloaded, and it's called How to Talk to Children About Cancer. And there is just some really good practical advice in there that's going to help you when, you know, your plan it, write it down stage of what you're going to say. So keep it clear, simple when you're coming with the explanations. And above all else, when you tell the children, then draw on your own support network because you're the priority here.
The 7-year-old, though, I'd be slightly concerned because she's a little bit older. She might say it to her friend. Somebody might say...
Oh, a friend might say it to her. This is the other thing. That's why I think you've got to be honest about, don't you know, shy away from the name of the illness. I think you can use the word cancer. I think you can explain that. And I think more than that, for a 7-year-old who is emotionally sensitive like this, you probably should use the word cancer, because if not, somebody else unhelpfully will.
Yeah.
And that's going to create a fear in her. Whereas if you've given her information, so when someone says, I heard your mom has cancer, she can say, yes, she does. And the doctor's working really hard to get her better.
In though, because she's a worrier and somebody might go to the worst case scenario to her, how do you answer that question?
Yeah, so if she, and that's where I think the support person's important, because I, reading this, would predict this child is maybe not going to come home and say to mom, are you going to die? Mm. And I also think as a parent who has an illness like this, you can't categorically say, gosh, no. Hopefully not.
Yeah.
Likely not, particularly at the stage this is caught in, the advances in treatment. But I really don't recommend giving children guarantees like that when we're talking about illness. So I would say, you know, it's sad that some people who have particular types of cancer or different kinds of cancer, sometimes they do die. But right now, the doctor feels that I'm going to do really well. Mm. So I'm working with my doctor and we are coming up with a plan. And we're just saying right now, it's looking really good. And if that changes, I will make sure you know.
Yeah. Our 17-year-old daughter announced to us last week she wants to quit school and move out of home. I am distraught. She's in her leaving cert year. Everything was going fine up until now. Last year, she got great grades for her end-of-year exams, and we thought she was well on track to get a good leaving cert. I have no idea where this is coming from, as nothing seems to have changed. Her friends are the same. She doesn't have a boyfriend. I have met with the principal, who hasn't heard from any of the teachers that her behaviour or schoolwork was problematic. In fact, her grades have gone up slightly, so it's really puzzling. I've asked her to come to a counsellor with me, but she point blank refuses. When I asked why she wants to move out, she said she wants more independence. We would run a strict enough household, but no more so than anyone else we know. We impose weekend curfews, but always check that homework is done before she's allowed to get on the phone at night. But I don't think we're being restrictive. She had a summer job waitressing and says that her boss will let her go full-time if she wants. Is there any way I can convince her to just stay and see out the year? I just don't know what to do and I'm desperate for help.
This really seems to have come from nowhere from this parent's perspective. And I suppose that's what I come back to. You say in this letter, you know, where is this coming from? Nothing has changed. And I find myself sticking with that and going, maybe that's the issue. Maybe the fact that nothing is changing at home is the issue, because at 17, of course she wants increased independence. Yeah. And of course she is now on the cusp of adulthood, young adulthood. She is actually facing into her last year in school and she's already thinking about getting out into the world. In lots of ways, it's really positive that she can see herself in that autonomous way, and that is to be nurtured and encouraged. However, I just suspect the parenting hasn't quite grown up with her at the way she might need and want it. You've got, as you describe here, a really good kid on your hands who's working hard and doing, as she will see it, doing her bit, and maybe is seeing you're not doing your bit to entrust her with more independence. So she's explicitly asking for that. You've asked her to go to a counsellor with you. Why with you? Ask her, would she go without you? I'm wondering, does she need a bit of space to let off steam and have a bit of a rant about you? Like, my mom and dad never give me space. They never let me do anything. She's not going to do that with you. So maybe go back to her and say, do you know what? What about you go without me? And then I'm going to put back on this parent, what about you go see somebody?
Yeah.
You know, I think there are lots of people doing excellent therapeutic parenting support out there. I'm not talking about a parenting course, you know, a behavior modification one, but a therapeutic parenting course, which really allows you to kind of reflect on your parenting journey and what needs to happen now. It's not that she no longer needs you, but how she needs you has changed. And I would be focusing on opportunities. She wants more independence. Focus on this and make a plan with her. Sit down and say, okay, I hear you. What does that look like to you? When you think about independence, because I guarantee you it's quite different to what you as a parent are thinking would constitute independence. I do feel, though, for this parent, because here you have this very bright young woman who has lots of opportunities ahead of her. Just stick out this last year of school. Please just stick out this last year of school. So I think you've got to be honest and say to her, that's how you're feeling. Don't issue any demands, but say, you know, really, when you break down a school year, there's about 6 months of active school left. Couldn't we just work together to get you through this stage, and suggest that when she does her Leaving Cert CAO, that she chooses colleges that facilitate her to move out of home?
Well, it's because it sounds like she doesn't hate school or
anything. No, nothing like that. It sounds like she needs some space to breathe and be herself. She's had a bit of a taste of it in this summer job waitressing. You know, she's had a taste of, God, I can get out, I can work, I can earn money, I can be out in the world. And obviously, as parents, you've done a great job at giving her enough life skills that she can do this. So really, I think you've got to take a little bit of the parental reins off here and trust the job that you've done so far, that if you relax the reins a little, she's not going to go completely off track. Yeah. She's letting you know, actually, I'm ready. So I think, you know, saying to her, please see out school. Let's sit down and redraw up the boundaries and expectations in terms of you having more independence and us giving you more space. And when it comes to filling out the CAO, let's look at you applying to colleges that enable you to move out of home If it's financially an option. And if it's not financially an option, one thing, again, to feed into the independence, and as parents, they might want to kill me for saying this, but let her do her Leaving Cert and take a year out to work for a year and save enough money so that she can actually move out to study.
Because often, certainly in my experience, when they hit leaving cert year in school, they're treated a bit more like adults in the school.
Absolutely.
And you've reached a point now where you can't really force them to study. They're either going to, you know, make a hames of it or not. And there's
nothing
you can do.
Nor should you force them, because this is the opportunity to get it right themselves. Mm. And whatever the outcome is, the outcome will be. But I think I do, again, empathize, though, that you've got her this far and like the finish line is within arm's reach if you can get her to do it. But I think you've got to hear that this is a young woman saying to you, you need to give me space.
Right, we do have to take a break. After that, a five-year-old with night terrors.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
Welcome back. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna Fortune is still with us. My five-year-old regularly has night terrors where she wakes up screaming and crying, banging her head to get rid of the images and voices she hears. This has gone on for over 2 years. She was otherwise a very, really happy child. We have a dream catcher and monster spray and a worry stone, but still she has the dreams. Any tips?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about night terrors actually a couple of times. And I think this is a really good example of, you know, having to differentiate between nightmares and night terrors, because the dream catcher, the monster spray, the worry stone, all really good things to do when you're talking about a nightmare, because there is some degree of conscious control. Generally, dreams are really important to all of us. It's how our unconscious mind takes unprocessed material from our life, from our day, from our interactions, and begins to try and work it through and interweave it with a narrative. So dreams are dreams, and we're not in the business of getting rid of dreams, because they are important. If it's a nightmare and if it was recurring, doing the techniques this parent is already trying, or even doing something like, okay, talking to them about it, what's the worst bit of the dream? Let's draw a picture of the worst bit. Let's pretend, you know, I use this kind of director technique. You're the director of the movie. You can say cut and cut the scene. What new scene would you put in to change the dream? And you're kind of getting them to focus in a different way. That can be really effective with a nightmare. However, if this is, and it seems to be, a genuine night terror, your child doesn't have control over it. It's something else. Night terrors tend to occur within the first couple of hours of going to sleep. And it is a glitch in transitioning from one phase of sleep into the other. So usually children wake up, or people, it's not just children, wake up screaming, shouting, but they're not in control of that. And they're often kind of out of it, would be a phrase you hear. It can also involve like sleepwalking. It can involve all kinds of things like that. And there's safety issues to be minded. But then when they are awake and you say, gosh, what happened? They'll often look at you like, what are you talking about? And they've no memory of it at all. So it's quite a different presentation. And because of that, things like the behavioral techniques of dream catchers and monster sprays really won't touch it, because that's not what's happening. So night terrors, again, tend to be hereditary. If one of you as parents experience these as a child, your own child is more likely to have them. They generally, not always, but generally outgrow them by about 8 years old. They can recur in adolescence and adulthood, usually triggered by times of stress. So you can sometimes say, well, this is going on and that's going on, so I understand why this is happening, so I need to address the stress. And the night terror will go. In terms of what can you do with them, it's very mixed. So there is one technique that I, you know, people I've worked with before have tried, and they've had, you know, some modicum of success with, but some people don't. So all you can do is try it. And it would be, I think parents who have, I'm just thinking back to the parent we were talking about trying to get children to sleep, who would like be going, don't do that. But when your child goes to sleep, and I mean like sound asleep, Wake them up.
Yeah.
And I mean wet face cloth in the face, like totally wake them up within about 5 minutes of them having gone into deep sleep. And then once they're wide awake, you've got to resettle them. And what's happening there is you're tricking the brain into thinking it's already been asleep and woken up. So you're trying to short circuit that glitch between one phase of sleep and the other. So that can be successful for some. And in other situations, unfortunately, you've just got to ride this out. Of course, you pay attention to, are there any contributing lifestyle factors? Are there any stress triggers going on for this child? I notice they're 5 years old. They have just perhaps started school. You know, a transition from play to big. That's a massive life change for a child. I don't know how it's going on over 2 years, though. So it's also going on since they were three, which is typically when they go into Montessori before going to big school. So have a look back. Was there a pattern or a transitional trigger for this. But I'm going to go back and say who else in the family has had this symptom. And you could go see your GP. You could go down the route of sleep specialist. But with night terrors, usually try a few things. They'll either work or they won't. And they should outgrow it.
Yeah, and I suppose it's worth asking because they're saying that she's kind of slapping her head to get rid of the images in her head. Now, is that it's just that they're reading of the situation, or is the child saying that?
You see, I don't know. I mean, that's the bit that's a little bit unusual with this, because that would say she is holding on to something, which would not be consistent with a night terror. Mm. She is holding on to it, or else when she's not fully awake but still in night terror mode, she's doing the banging. That would be more consistent.
Yeah.
But again, that, of course, there's concerns with that. So, no, I think this is something that, I mean, you've been doing this for over 2 years. That is a long time to be dealing with it.
Yeah.
So you could also consider bringing her to somebody like a child psychotherapist, a specialist, who could just see, is there an underlying anxiety behind this? Even if there's nothing apparent, we can often overlook something that seems quite small. Mm. To us, that actually could be quite big for a young child.
I'm hoping you can offer me some advice to help my daughter, who has recently started pulling her hair. She's just turned 3 a few weeks ago, and as the past few months developed to having a pulling out her hair, it seems to be a form of comfort to her. She sucks her thumb on her left hand and tends to pull out her hair with her right hand. She's always sucked her thumb and never had a soother. Up until a few weeks ago, she'd been breaking the hair as opposed to pulling it from the root. But in the last 2 weeks, she seems to be pulling from the root, is already starting to develop a small bald patch. She fractured her arm in August, which led to her being in a cast for 3 weeks. The cast covered some of the left thumb, which led to her stopping sucking the thumb. The hair pulling also stopped for that period, so clearly they are associated. I thought we were home and dry, and that a 3 week break from the habit would be sufficient to stop things altogether. However, once the cast was removed, the thumb sucking and the hair pulling resumed. I've offered her a thin ribbon as an alternative to play with, and sometimes this can distract her temporarily. However, when very tired, there's no real substitute for the hair for her. Given her age, I'm wondering if you can advise on any specific things to try to stop the hair pulling. I expect I will have to tackle the thumb sucking also, but I'm wondering, will that be all too much to tackle at once for her, given the fact that the 3 week break from both behaviours while in a cast back in August was not sufficient to break the cycle? I'd appreciate any advice or guidance you can give. I wasn't even aware of this as a condition until this summer, and I'm anxious to help nip it in the bud. This, of course, is trichotillomania.
Trichotillomania, exactly. Yeah. Or trick for short, or in this case with such a young child, baby trick. Mm. And baby trick is a slight bit different because in young children, these kinds of patterns can come and go. So you could go through a phase of it and then it could actually completely stop and you think, great. And then it's back again. A little bit like the cast experience here. It stopped and you're like, yes, home and dry. And then you're back to where you were. It can, because in young, if it starts this young, it can actually resolve itself over time. But in others, it can be a beginning of a lifelong disorder situation. Now, it is very different to OCD, though often gets lumped in with OCD diagnoses or behaviours. It's not an obsessive compulsive disorder. It is something in and of itself. I mean, you could look up online lots of information about it. I do think because you had the pulling of the hair for a few months and it's in the last couple of weeks, it's escalated to pulling out, but already with a bald patch. I do think you probably need to seek some professional advice on that. I mean, if nothing else around the hair itself and the bald patch, consult with a hairdresser around that and about some scalp treatments. But I think I would want you to go to the doctor and seek a referral because she's so young. I love when children are this young because you've got so much more options in the public system as well because of the early years team for under fives. Get in now because you'll get access to a multidisciplinary assessment approach that will look at all kinds of things because there is a sensory element to this as well because there's something in the pulling on the scalp and then the touch of the hair that is speaking to her. Now, I'm struck that she does this while sucking her thumb. So I do get this parent making the association that maybe it's comfort.
They go together, yeah.
The thin ribbon, super idea. And I'm going to take it a step further and say, could you give her a Dolly's hair that she could pull the hair out of Dolly's head while doing it? So because it's almost in one stage, you want to break the habit that it's her own hair, but she might still need to feel hair. Which is different to a ribbon.
Yeah. Okay.
Different texture. Yeah. So try Dolly's hair, or again, I mean, look, we're at Halloween. There's loads of silly wigs in the shops. Buy a few of those and let her pull away at those. Once she's not eating them, of course, and you don't mention that because some trick symptoms can eat it as well. And that's also quite unconscious. They're not even aware they're eating it. So just once that's not an issue, let's not even introduce it as an issue. So the doll's hair could be something. I am agreeing with you. Leave the thumb sucking alone. That is not your issue right now. I would be dealing with the trick behaviours and I would be dealing with them quite head on. So I don't think there's anything you have or haven't done. I think you're coming into this at an early stage. Certainly don't, and you don't say you are, but in general for anyone listening, don't chastise or give out or do the don't do that or I've told you not, because your child is going to get very confused by that because this isn't a conscious behaviour. So they're just going to, why are you giving out to me? I didn't do anything. Distraction and redirection are useful things. So when you see it, just simply bring her in to do something that needs that hand. Get her doing something. Increase her access to sensory play. Lots of finger painting, sand, water, bubbles, dry sensory basin. You know, like pouring like dry lentils, lima beans, pasta shapes into a bowl and just letting her play with that.
Yeah.
You know, put it one hand to the other. A wet sensory basin, you know, tepid water, squirt of washing up liquid, a teaspoon of cinnamon or ginger, something pungent, and give her a handheld whisk and let her whisk that up. And that's going to give her a whole sensory engagement. These kinds of techniques can help. If it is actual trichotillomania, they're not going to get rid of it, but they might help you in the short term while you're processing or progressing rather something else to do. But I would seek advice on that.
Yeah. Is there any one cause for this?
There really isn't a known cause. I mean, lots of things can contribute to episodes of it, like stress, anxiety, things like that. But causation and correlation, as you know, are different things.
Yeah.
So this tends to be viewed in terms of just a disorder in and of itself, a syndrome with these kinds of overt behaviours. So it isn't a thing. That's why I'm saying, like, there isn't anything that in retrospect you could have done differently.
Yeah.
This may simply be something, again, we would look at, does anyone else in the family have a history of doing this?
Would that, can that be a factor?
It can be a factor,
yeah.
Absolutely. And often treatment plans involve a type of CBT, cognitive behavioural approach. Very difficult to get someone to do CBT on a toddler. So you want to go to an experienced child psychologist, child psychiatrist who will have techniques, and a lot of it involves bringing the parent with you, so that whatever as a professional I would be doing, I would be training and upskilling the parent to do those at home, so that it's an ongoing and the child is getting a consistent response from everybody.
Joanna Fortune, thanks a million for coming in. We're going to take a break, back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk,
sponsored by Avantcard. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.